Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's the Round Ball Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, Ted Stepien, Jack Kent Cook, Joey Devine, Michael Heisley, George Shin, John Keane, Donald Sterling, Clay Bennett, special guest Spencer Owen, other special guest Joe Quazala, Patreons Ethan Schiller, thank you Ethan, Isaac Cohen, thank you Isaac, Sahar 224, thank you 224 times. Musical guest, The Eagles. And now the temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine.
Hi, it's me, Joey Devine, your temporary host of the Round Ball Rock podcast, and we are back with a brand new episode. I'm here, as always, with America's Uncle Dad, Sean Keane. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. I've been making up some new pool games for my nephew, keeping my reputation intact. One of them is called Drunk Giraffe.
How does that work?
So I'm the giraffe and I just have my arms out like this, even though a giraffe doesn't actually do that. And my nephew basically holds on to my shoulders and climbs on my back, and I stagger around the pool and spin around demanding leaves. Mm-hmm. And then we go to a leaf store and I have to come up with a reason why they won't serve me leaves. And it is exhausting because he's bigger than he used to be.
We have two special guests here today doing a thing that we'll get into. First off, we have musician from the Spencer Owen timeshare. From Spencer Owen, we have Spencer Owen himself, Spencer Owen. Spencer, how are you doing?
I'm from myself and from myself. I'm doing great. Thanks, Joey. Thanks for having me.
Spencer.
Hi, Sean. Hi.
You're a musician, a very good one, who I've known for a very long time. And you have, premiering today, a Kickstarter that is the reason for this episode. Do you want to tell our audience about your Kickstarter?
There are so many reasons for this episode, Joey. Do not sell it short. But thank you for asking me to do this on the behalf of my little project. I have a Kickstarter launching today that is an album I recorded about 15 years ago almost that I want to get on vinyl for the first time because I turned to it one day and I thought, this is still my favorite thing I've ever made. And I never got to release it in any format whatsoever. So it's called Letter Dance. And I made it with a band that is no longer in existence from Santa Cruz, California, called James Rabbit. We took the song Let Her Dance by Bobby Fuller 4, and we played the riff from the song for 40 minutes straight, live, with one microphone. And then I took that recording and I overdubbed a bunch of melodic and rhythms and stuff all on top of it. And it sounds like some experimental ballyhoo, should we say, when I describe it. But it is something that I'm extremely proud of. And I can say that from the people that have listened to it, that know me, I've gotten probably the most positive reactions from this of anything I've done.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm a huge Spencer Owen fan as both a person and a musician. Musician first, funnily enough, but then very quickly person. We're also here with another good friend of mine from the Who Cares About the Rock Hall podcast. From his special, which used to be called Bleed American, but then 9/11 happened. So now it is called recommended based on your search history. One of my favorite guys, Joe Quazala. Joe, how are you doing?
Hey, y'all. I'm good. Thanks for having me. This is a music based episode, and I think I've said it a little bit publicly, but I actually have a album coming out soon that will have music on it. So, you know, this will be an appropriately themed venture.
Well, that's why we asked you, because
you're a Chinese Democracy. Yeah. Okay.
Bleed Chinese is what it's called.
Unfortunately, it did have a song about how New York City cops aren't smart, but you had to cut it again because 9/11 happened.
Yeah, it's really, this has been, yeah. I am releasing it in September, so I am like crossing my fingers there's not another one.
But before we get into our music theme of this episode, there was actual basketball news that happened today. Then Joe and Spencer are not basketball fans, but we're going to make them talk about this news anyway. Let's go to the news.
This is Round Ball Rock News. Basketball news for humans and robots. Trust the process.
Okay, Joe and Spencer, I'm going to walk you through this very slowly. So there's this man named James Harden who plays for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Beard.
Yeah, he's famous for having a beard.
He's best friends with rapper Lil Baby. He once gave him just a big brick
a
of
Louis
cash
Vuitton
for his birthday.
Bag of cash.
That fucking rocks. Honestly,
it was like $250,000, I think.
I think that's correct.
It might have been $500,000, but yeah.
James Harden also has a candy, like a gummy, based around his head.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got
it's
a beard. It's a very specific profile. Now, a couple of months ago, James Harden, for the third time in his career, demanded a trade from the Philadelphia 76ers. And the GM of the Sixers, Daryl Morey, said he was working on the trade, but then on Saturday announced that the Philadelphia 76ers were not going to trade James Harden because he couldn't get a deal that he liked and is expecting James Harden to show up to work. Now, James Harden currently is on a shoe tour in China, which is something NBA players do. And today, in the middle of a big event full of people, he grabbed the microphone and said, "Daryl Morey is a liar, and I will never be a part of an organization that he's part of. Let me say that again. Daryl Morey is a liar, and I will never be a part of an organization that he's part of again." Then, the funniest thing he did, he got on a moped and drove it around the basketball court and then drove out of the basketball court because all and a secret thing about all NBA contracts is they are forbidden to drive mopeds because you fall off them and hurt your ankles.
Yeah.
So my question for you guys is what's the most extreme behavior you've ever done to get fired from a job?
Oh my God.
Wow. I mean, I'm I don't know about Spencer, but I'm a relatively mild mannered, chill dude. I did Spencer.
So is James Harden, to be fair.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Spencer. You don't strike me as like a maniac.
I've only gotten laid off. I've never gotten fired. I've only gotten laid off. But yeah. I mean,
I had a shift in my life when I was working at a grocery store as a cashier when I was in college, like summer in mm-hmm. between years in college. So working at a place called Treasure Island in mm-hmm. Chicago, which sounds much more exciting than it is. It's just a grocery store. There's no treasure. There's nothing island like about it. But I found myself stressing out about the job. And then suddenly I was like, wait a second. I don't care if I get fired. Like, I'm in college. This is not my career. I don't. And mm-hmm. every job, every like day job I've had since then, I've gone into it with that mentality where I'm like, if I get fired, that's fine. And I had an office job in Chicago where like I was supposed to be there at 10. Sometimes I'd show up at like 1:30 and just I wouldn't do the work either.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this you are James Harden. That's
yeah,
what you're
I mean,
telling
but, but,
yeah.
But it, you know, he's much more kind of ostentatious about it. I was able to get away with what I was doing because one, nobody was paying attention to me. And then what had happened is I had been hired by a guy who like left very quickly. And then like the succession of bosses like that happened after that, they just like didn't know about me. And then also the other people in the office were so old, they didn't know that you could be on a computer and not working.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they thought I was like really devoted to the job because I was in front of the computer, but really what I was doing was like dicking around on the internet for, yeah. you know, 6 or 7 hours straight.
I think on like a dictionary.com word of the day email that I used to get like 20 years ago, the only one that ever stuck in my mind was the word sinecure, which is the word for a job where you have no essentially outlined tasks. You just kind of fill a position and don't really do anything. Mm-hmm. Ever since I heard that term, I thought that would be really, I mean, early on, I thought that would be great. Like that would be good. Mm-hmm. And now when I've like talked to people about that who've had those jobs, they have said that it was torture. Mm-hmm. Some of them though, Joe, did you think that was torture? Because some people have said like, I felt like I didn't know what I was supposed to do with my entire life in those moments.
Well, no, I mean, it was the opposite of torture because I didn't want to be there and I could do whatever I wanted. And if they did fire me, like I could see how it would be scary if I like wanted to rise the ranks of that in that place, but I didn't. Yeah. I even like that first boss that I mentioned who left at one point offered me a better job where he had gone to because he was mm-hmm. rising the ranks. He was like, do you want to come with me? And I was like,
no.
Here's the thing. It seems like, you know, being his assistant would have been a lot of work. And what I was doing was like reading movie reviews, like yeah. taking mm-hmm. online quizzes, G-chatting.
Yeah.
And occasionally, actually with some regularity, printing out scripts for my sketch show on the printer in the office. I just had unlimited like resources. It was just it. Yeah. And nobody bothered me. So I was like, nah, thank you for the offer, but I'm good.
Yeah. That's great. That's like not existentially terrifying the way that some people make it sound.
Yeah. Well, and it was like short term too. You knew you weren't going to be there that long.
And I knew I wouldn't even be in Chicago that long, you know? So it was just like, yeah, I would be able to find something new if they were like, you have disgraced us and you've brought great dishonor to the central offices of Chicago Public Schools. It would not have affected what I wanted to do.
You would have just been like, okay.
Yeah. Oh no. Too bad.
We had the most impressive example of this I've ever seen does relate to 9/11.
Perfect.
I used to work in the clock tower at UC Berkeley, and there was a woman whose job it was like $5 to go up and like free if you were a student. So working the job at the bottom where you took the money was really good because it was really cool. It was all made of limestone, and the elevator took like. Was like a 10 minute round trip and only like four people could go at once. So it was just an incredibly slow paced job, but they didn't trust the students with the money. So there was a woman whose job was just to like open it up, release the money, count the money at the end of the day. So after 9/11, they closed the tower because obviously Al-Qaeda would want to knock down literally any tower. It just
they were going after was,
you know, a city like Berkeley that's notoriously so patriotic and unfriendly to anti-government. So the woman whose job was really just to count the money from the tower didn't have anything to do, and I think they were just hoping she would quit, and she just went into the main visitor center office. She would sit in a chair and she wouldn't do anything else. She wouldn't like read or anything. She would just sit there and like put in the time. And after like 6 months, they finally just gave her like early retirement. Wow. But they said it was so uncomfortable because she didn't have a desk and it was like a place where other people were working. She was just quietly sitting in the chair, you know, taking the breaks like at the right times. And that's like, that was like, oh my God, you are a strong, like I underestimated your willpower. I would get so uncomfortable like 6 minutes into that. And I'd be like, I should just resign.
I'm really impressed. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
I bet she could have gotten away with a book.
I also think so. It's Berkeley. Like,
no, that's religious fortitude is what that is. That's like actually practicing something. Like she's like,
when I was working at the Bubba Gum Shrimp Company, when it was really slow and boring and raining and no one would want to go home, I would play a game where I would pay people money to drink things they shouldn't drink. And I paid a guy $20 to drink two little ramekins of Drawn butter that was there for the lobster.
Oh, God.
And then a little ramekin of malt vinegar. And he did it and then immediately threw up, said he was too sick to work and went home. And I never saw him again.
Whoa.
Wow. I would like to see James Harden start doing that. Just like, hey, this I was going to give this brick to little baby, but Tobias Harris, if you drink this real hot, a shot glass of hot sauce, and then...
So let's... there is a musical. There is a musical element to this story. I want to play you guys. So Daryl Morey, the man who, according to James Harden, is a liar, is obsessed with musical theater. And he once produced a musical when he was in Houston called Small Ball. That was a basketball themed episode musical about a. An island of Lilliputians who want to start a basketball team. That's what it is, right, Sean?
They don't have the concept. For some reason, they don't have a concept of the number five. So it's confusing, but he's... Right. He's full size and they're little and there's sex in the musical.
Well, I'm going to play that song.
Yeah.
So here is the song Sex with Giants from Daryl Morey's musical Small Ball.
Small Ball.
You can walk into the ancient cave or unlock the rune-inscribed chest and just find rocks or a moth or nothing.
What's your point?
That His Highness is proposing to run a team on mystery. A mystery that is ungraspable by anyone but you. Our numbers, lady.
Look.
You're Hortense the elephant. You're all about that thing that we commoners just can't get, can't see. But what if we can't? Not because it's not real, but because it's actually inconsequential. The people on that elephant's dust speck. So what if they were there? Was there any chance for meaningful exchange between
okay,
that dust?
Okay, first off, before we get past
this
that.
This is impossible to understand. This is like unparsable.
Yeah.
I think it would have more sex.
Yeah, well, we're getting there. Don't worry. But I just, Joe, you were making a series of faces that I want you to audibly tell the listeners about.
I mean, it's just, like Spencer said, it's, I don't know at all what's happening.
Uh-huh.
But then at a certain point, you're like, are they improvising this? Like, there doesn't seem to be any, like, rhyme scheme,
uh-huh.
And it just feels, yeah, like they're just kind of following whatever whim they happen to stumble upon.
And you're from Chicago, so you know when people are improvising. Mm-hmm. It's part
Listen,
of, well, you're
I
not
know,
from there, but you live there.
I know when Baby Wants Candy, which is a reference to a musical improv group out of Chicago. And listen, if you want me to start rattling off the names of musical improv groups, Cupid Has a Heart On.
Is that coming in the song? Is that line in the song?
Well, I'm going to jump ahead here. Let's see if I can get to
adventures you don't go on. Some water from dark wells you leave undrawn. Long nights of the soul that know no dawn. The puzzling duckling that's a crow and not a swan.
Wow.
There are mysteries you don't want to dwell on. There are...
See, I used to be able to jump right to the part where he's talking about how people want to have sex with giants.
Yeah.
Hold on.
There are adventures.
I also don't know where it is anymore, though, is
quickly,
the problem. Yeah, go ahead.
Is it about basketball?
Yes. The
I
lead
did get
character,
some indication,
yeah,
the
lead
much.
Character's name is Michael Jordan, but the small people have hired someone that's not the Michael Jordan to lead their basketball team.
Is this an is this, what sect of theater is this? Like, this is so abstract.
Look, we've been tweeting at Daryl Morey for years to come on and talk to us about this play, and he so does crazy. Not respond.
We did a Les Miserables song about Luka Doncic purely to appeal to him, and nothing.
All right, that leads us into the other musical reason we're here.
Oh, wow. We don't get to hear this. Okay. All
oh,
right.
Yeah, well,
fair
I can't
enough.
Find it. I can't find it on yeah. my... Oh, hold on. Is it here?
We're going to have to... I think
the
we're just going to have
people.
To...
people. You can't combine the issues.
They're the exact same issue. Exact same.
How possibly are...
Adding. You want to add to the team. Lily's over there. Just over there.
Wanna get naked with...
Yeah, here we go.
There we go.
Nonsense. Phil, he's just...
We wanna get naked with giants or know what's between 4 and 6, how to bring the parts into compliance. I just cannot grasp the mechanics.
Oh, God.
Do we wanna have sex with giants?
Sex with giants.
Sex with giants.
Sex.
There it is. All right.
All right. Palmer, is Amanda Palmer involved in this? That's the question. I'm just glad you mentioned the five thing, Sean, because that line really jumped out.
Also, I don't really understand how they have the other numbers and not five. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's like that Mr. Show sketch where they can't, the mobsters 24. Can't count what the highest number is. All right.
Thank you, Joey.
Spencer, we've had you on before. Don't thank me for making you do this.
We like having people on to plug their things. We don't always make them earn it quite as hard as Spencer. Same with Joe.
Only ask you guys to do this because we're actual friends, and I know you won't unfriend me
for long.
So, Spencer, how long ago was it that we had you on? Two years now?
Man, it was April 2020, which is crazy to imagine. Because, like, I looked back at that timestamp, and I was just like, were we ever so everything? Like, it was like April 2020. You know, need I say more than that?
Yeah, not to make COVID worse, but we made it worse by making Spencer listen to the owner of the Knicks, James Dolan's newest album. And we had Spencer and Joe on now to talk about James Dolan's earliest album that is available. He has two more albums that come before this, but this is the earliest one on the streaming services. That's right. We listened to JD and the Straight Shots' Ballyhoo, 100% acoustic. If you look at the cover, it's a big way to sell this album is that it's all acoustic. Joe, first question, because you're new to this.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, what do you know about JD and the Straight Shot going into this?
I mean, I think you had brought it up to me a number of times.
It's true. I only talk about like four things.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm familiar with his, you know, his connection to Madison Square Garden. And also, you know, that in that through that, his connection to Irving Azoff, who is like a major player in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And then I've skimmed his Wikipedia page since I knew this was happening, and I was horrified.
Yeah. He's not a great guy. Or a good basketball owner. He's actually a terrible basketball owner. Sean, go ahead. You were going to say something.
He's the owner of the Knicks. He inherited the team from his dad. It's basically a cable company that bought the Knicks, and now they're like a real estate company that happens to own a basketball team. Is that correct? Basically, yeah. He basically made the owner of the Clippers give him $1 billion for the Forum to avoid being sued. Mm-hmm. Right now, he's pushing for New York City to renovate Penn Station, which is right by Madison Square Garden, because he would get like $1 billion payout for demolishing this little theater there. Got COVID really early in COVID
and gave it to one of our friends. Our friend Shane Torres thinks he got COVID from James Dolan because he did a show and Dolan was there and shook his hand, and then 2 days later they announced James Dolan had COVID, and then right, Shane I Torres had COVID.
I believe it.
I don't know. That's Jesus. Not my story to tell. We'll have Shane on maybe sometime to talk about that.
Yeah. And so his band is JD and Straight Shot, and they are roots, would you say?
Americana.
Americana, yeah.
Americant.
So my first question for you guys is, as a musician and a music expert, Joe, what do you describe yourself as?
It's a musician.
He's a musician,
but also, you know, I guess a light music historian.
Yeah, you're a historian, yeah. Are there any good Americana bands in the first place?
Right, because I mean, do you consider that the maybe origin point of this style of music to be the band? Like, I love the band. They're one of my all time favorites, and I would hate to compare them even indirectly to whatever Dolan thinks he's doing. But I do think if you trace it back, that's probably a. But the thing is, when I kept listening to Dolan, there was such a blues element mm-hmm. to it that really felt offensive to me.
Yeah.
You know, like this was the, you know, it's often discussed, you know, that blues is Black American music. And when white guys do it, there's something feels kind of wrong about it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some white guys can do it justice. But hearing James Dolan take on the blues mm-hmm. really felt it's like one of the most racist things that wasn't technically racist that
yes.
I felt like I've ever experienced.
See, I was listening to this particular album and the first thought that came to my mind is, it's so funny this guy had a billionaire dad and then inherited $1 billion when really all he wants to do is be the band that plays the Horseshoe Lounge at Disneyland, which is that cowboy saloon where you get churros.
I mean, yeah, I was going to make a similarly low cultural reference, which is like, you know, not that I don't like things about this. My spouse is a huge fan, but like, if anyone's ever seen the TV show Firefly,
mm-hmm.
the
yes!
theme song for that
yes!
show is this album, basically in a nutshell. Like, that's just Oof. What it is. Sound. That's what it sounds like.
The blues filtered through Joss Whedon.
Yeah. I mean, learning that some of this music has been on TV did not surprise me, because it did feel like mm-hmm. like whitewashed cable television bullshit. Like, it would fit in that world.
I made a specific note about a song that I'll have to, that'll loop back to that.
Well, before we get into that, I have JD and the Straight Shots biography up here.
Okay,
right now.
Great.
And in it, they say, inspired by artists such as Fleetwood Mac, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Civil Wars, Jefferson Airplane, The Turtles, Three Dog Night, and the Yardbirds. JD and the Straight Shot delivers a sweet sound and strong songwriting mixed with the swagger of rock and roll.
I will say it does sound like he spent a bunch of money on it.
Yeah, people, talented musicians are playing on
yes.
this
yeah.
album.
But he is not sure. talented. Like, no. Maybe we should just get into the songs and talk about it as we go. But like, there's something about what you.
Well, I do want to point out
after.
Go ahead. Go ahead, yeah. Spencer.
I was just gonna say, after listening to two albums by this band, incredibly, the name The Jefferson Airplane really jumped out at me, because I keep wondering, like, what the fuck is this psychedelia that keeps coming up in his music? And that basically explains it there. Like, just name and dropping that band is like, that's all you need to know. Anyway,
we should also point out before we get into this, if you go see a band at Madison Square Garden, there is, especially of a certain generation, there is a chance that the man who owns the venue will be opening for them with his terrible band. And don't worry, that is also in the biography. JD and the Straight Shot has toured alongside musical luminaries like the Doobie Brothers, Chicago, the Eagles, Keith Urban, Don Henley, Dixie Chicks, Jewel, Joe Walsh, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and more. So,
toured alongside.
I'm not very familiar with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, but I feel like they're a good match for the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Yeah. All right. We listened to 2016's Ballyhoo. And here is a little bit of, I cannot believe how boring this first track is. I'm going to go right off the bat and say this album takes three tracks for me to even remember a song. And then that third track is a little too memorable, but we'll get to that. Here's track one, empty.
I'm empty as a promise. I'm hungry in my bones. Empty, but I'm honest. Honestly alone.
All right, I would say
that's the kicker. That's the kicker there.
I would say
so clever.
Empty is it's a real canary in the coal mine for this album, in that every song is going to sound exactly like that for 45 minutes.
I will say, as an opener on this album, they're hiding his voice for as long as they can.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally. It gets really much harder to listen to his singing as it goes on.
But yeah, he has talented backup singers, and this one he's almost getting away with like Rex Harrison style, just talking his way through the song.
Well, except he's not even good at that, which we'll get to when we get to Ballyhoo, where he does like a carnival barker thing. Does anyone have anything to say about the track Empty? Because I do not.
Yeah. Absolutely not.
Well, I thought this sounded like it should have been from the soundtrack of the film Oh Brother, Why Art Thou Like This? It's my own wordplay, Dolan.
The dude thinks he's so goddamn clever. I just repeated the same process I did for the first time, because I listened back to the episode and I just wanted to, you know, get my grounding, you know, give us some context for this session. And so I just wrote little notes for every track. I couldn't help it. I just wrote, oh, JD. I was just like, that's just the first.
Uh-oh, Spencer, you're breaking up. We're having internet problems.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. So when you were gone, I got to say, I did feel a little empty.
That's sweet. Thanks. I think he's doing an offensive voice in this song, even though he is pretty much like singing, you know, he's capably carrying it like throughout the choruses. He says, work my fingers to the bone.
He does say the bone.
Yeah. There's some of that implicit racism.
Exactly. And I also wrote down, is it possible for a song to be too acoustic? that was the first thought I had. Like about a minute into this, I was like, I think that's what's happening here. That's probably the best way to describe the arrangement.
Well, it is important, again, I pointed that out, but the cover of the album has a little band on it that says 100% acoustic.
Yeah.
As if that has ever been a selling point for anything ever.
Which detected like alternating current.
I gotta say, I would say the voice feels a little racist, but I think he's actually trying to appropriate working culture here.
Yes.
Yeah. He's like, work my fingers to the bone, but he's like a horrible boss.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like a song he would play for the Pinkertons to like fire them up.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna move on to track two, which again for me was another forgettable track. It's called, but again, implicitly problematic, I think, in that a man from New York who's a billionaire named it Better Find a Church.
When you find a church.
When you walk through the garden.
Yeah, that was actually the one note I had, which this sounds like.
I only thought that now. I didn't do that when I was first listening to it.
Oh, yeah. It feels like a mashup of that and the Justified theme song.
it sounds like a really bad Wire.
Yeah.
Version.
When you walk through. That's what you've done.
And it smells sweet.
I will say, in future albums we've heard, he stops doing this. He does this a lot, which on this album, he has a lot of people who can actually sing, singing behind him. Like, there's one track, I can't remember if it's this one or if it's Glide, that opens with, like, a Crosby, Stills, Nash thing before he comes in. And it's, like, really the juxtaposition of his voice and a real singer's voice is jarring and scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. This one, my first thought when I heard this is that James Dolan thinks this sounds really sexy.
Oh.
Like, don't you think he's like, yeah, this is I'm really crooning on this one.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a similarity for sure between this and the last album we did, The Great Divide, with the Bees song, where he's like, bees can sting like honey. And I have a clip of that one here.
Oh, God, I hate that song.
Because bees can give you honey, but honey, they can sting you too.
Uh-huh.
Kind of lost me in the metaphor.
all of us ever like this.
What? Okay. How?
The idea is explored. There's no denying that the idea is explored in any given.
Well, I can't wait to get to Nature's Way there, because I have a lot to say about the metaphor for Nature's Way. But Better Find a Church, again, this is actually where I want to talk about this album versus the last album, Spencer, because the last album we listened to also has this one waltzy song. And this one is so much worse than that last one. It does prove that JD and the Straight Shot have gotten better? Question mark?
I guess I would acknowledge that.
It's a little more listenable. The album we did before is a little more listenable.
This one I
really had nothing to say about it. The Spotify lyrics are time synced, which is impressive. That's like means that somebody put some time into it, the programming there, but they are also riddled with typos and mistakes, so that's funny. I watched a video, a couple videos to prep for this, of the band playing these songs live. Oh. And there's one that's like a 4-song set for something called AOL Build, which is like their speaker series, I guess. But they also had JD play 4 songs with his band. I don't have much to say. They played both Empty and Better Find a Church. And I don't have much to say about those performances, except he is a vacuum of charisma. And especially in this song, he has the violinist singing a duet with him, singing like basically the whole song in unison with him. Mm-hmm. And there's no charisma, there's no chemistry. He occasionally looks over at her, like leers over at her, and there's like nothing.
Well, that's because she is his employee, Spencer.
Right. Oh, totally. I didn't even get much from that. This song is a dead zone.
Well,
I'm
glad we've had nothing to say about the first 2 tracks, because I think we're gonna have a lot to say about the 3rd track.
I have one more thing to say, which is that my note on this song was they're really protecting his voice. His voice is still way too far up in the mix.
Yep, true.
Well, last album we had a song about Harvey Weinstein. And this album,
I Should Have Known.
It was called I Should Have Known, and how he would have beat up Harvey Weinstein if he knew, except everyone knew. So anyway,
also he's a creep. He's paid out tens of millions of dollars in sexual harassment judgments.
But this one is called Under the Hood.
And under it that is hood. I
under
have to
that hood.
You.
Sorry,
yeah, yeah.
Under that hood, and it's about Trayvon Martin. I'm going to play the beginning here, because it's a song that changes perspectives.
Yeah, play it, G.
Yeah.
Hot Florida night out on patrol, keeping the bad boys under control. It's all good in the neighborhood. Who's that walking a shadow in the street? Looks like trouble from my judgment seat. There's no good under that hood.
Okay, so full disclosure, I knew this song was on this album. I knew I'd never heard it before, but when we got to this point in the song, knowing JD's politics, I was like, oh no!
Like, it's a George Zimmerman apology.
Yeah, like, yeah, this is like a George Zimmerman song. Luckily, I mean, not luckily, but it does...
Someone did make him change the lyrics to be.
Yeah, well, there was just clearly a moment sensitive when he read that story in the paper and months later, finally, for the first time, heard the phrase all good in the hood. And he was like, I found it. I found my in. This is how I can talk about the Trayvon Martin.
And it's I pulled what I felt was the deepest section lyrically here. I'll play that.
Good.
Nothing in his pockets but candy and a pop. What made him different and why did he get stopped? The color of his skin or a hoodie on his head. It ain't no reason for the boy to be dead.
I mean, here's a song where I wonder if he insisted, like, don't hide my voice, because, like, he's really front and center in a way that, like, undermines any possible thing he's attempting to get across. Like, you just can't, like, I mean, obviously the lyrics are stupid and, like, the fact that he thinks he's the one to deliver this message, but then the fact that it's like, he's only got candy
and a pop. The fact that a man, this is not a man who calls soda pop. I'm gonna go out.
He's from Cleveland.
You know, regionally, that I honestly,
does that track? Okay,
I think that might track.
Okay, sorry, JD.
being from that part of the country, and it pains me to have to say
defend
this,
James Dolan.
Yeah,
I didn't know that this was. I should have known, but I didn't know that this was on this, and I didn't know what it was about until about a minute into the song. I was listening to the lyrics, and I was like, oh my God, this there's no mistaking the topic of this song.
See, Joe was texting me and he was like, I'm 7 songs in and I can't believe. And I'm like, hey, at least you're not going to hear another song about Trayvon Martin. And Joe responded, I am not listening to the lyrics. I did not realize there was a Trayvon Martin.
Oh my God.
I was multitasking in a way that is could only be described as disrespectful to this podcast.
I was doing laundry when I listened to it the first time. And once it went under that hood, I just stopped and sat down on the couch for a minute.
Yeah, well, I went and listened to it because in our text when you guys were texting earlier, you were like, yeah, make sure to buckle in for a chat about this one. I was like, yeah, I'll listen again. And as I was listening to it again, I thought this listening to this twice is really a tough call as a human being. Like,
this one might be the worst song I've ever heard in my whole life. I mean, I was like, this is much worse than any of the other James Dolan songs. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I haven't heard a worse song.
I actually disagree. I think there are 2 worse songs on this album. Like,
what?
This one is worse. I mean, this is bad from like a humanity standpoint, but from a song standpoint, I think there are 2 worse songs on this particular album.
So yeah, he should have to pay. How much money do you think he should have to pay Trayvon Martin's family for releasing this song? Like $300,000?
I was going to say $10 million.
Yeah.
That might be aiming a little low. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I already have a thing where, like, if I hear a song that just defends my aesthetic sensibilities, I come up with an amount that someone should be fined, just like in general fined. And like, usually it's like, yeah, 50,000 for this one. But like now I'm like, yeah, 10 million seems like the floor.
Given the amount of money this guy has.
Yeah. You got to get that sweet, sweet Cablevision money. All right. Let's move on to Perdition track 4. I'm just going to pick anywhere randomly in this one.
Into Perdition.
Strong enough to stay alive when all that love is gone. No reason to survive. Maker always comes on time. For man in your condition.
Okay, he rhymes perdition and condition.
Can I make a request? And I can't believe I'm doing this, yeah. But like. Each of these tracks, I would like to hear how they start, and
okay,
then
yes, and yes, then we can do that. Yeah, 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 just yeah, yeah. Here's how this one starts. Here's how Perdition starts.
Man needs a reason to live. That's will it. And purpose to see him through. Gives all he can give till there's nothing left to lose.
I like that they put echo on his voice in this one. I will say that.
Left to lose. When do you think he learned the word perdition? Did he see the movie Road to Perdition?
I have a treat for you guys, which is so I mentioned AOL Build. Right?
Yes, you did. Yeah,
I can't believe that's coming back.
I wrote down the intro to this. His spoken intro to this song.
Thank you.
Banter leading up to this song. And by the way, this is. But just to also call back to what Joe said earlier about TV. I wrote, is this like a Sons of Anarchy like kind of thing? Like it just sounded like he was trying to get on that show. But like, although it might have been after that show ended, whatever, it didn't matter. Here's what he wrote. Here's what he said. Am I frozen, by the way?
No, you're good.
You're chopping a little bit.
You're chopping, but it's okay. Now you're frozen.
Yeah. Now you're back.
My apologies once more. Okay, great. Here's what he says. I'll make it quick. This next one's called Perdition, and it's going to be in a movie that's coming out next month called Jane Got a Gun with Natalie Portman. It's a Western shoot 'em up, and about every 30 seconds, somebody dies horribly. And then somebody on stage says something off mic, and he says, and he chuckles, and he's like, story of your life, right, great. Bizarre. Super bizarre. Some weird tragedy being invoked there. Anyway, and then he says, anyway, then they end up going to perdition. So here it is. And then
here's the thing. I thought maybe this movie like never happened, but I looked it up.
Nope.
And it did. And in the soundtrack, uncredited is Perdition. IMDb lists Perdition as an uncredited part of the soundtrack. So,
by the way, $25 million budget, $3.8 million box office.
To be fair, it is a Gavin O'Connor movie, and that guy makes some sort of okay stuff. Warrior's really good. I liked Mayor of Easttown. All right. let's move
Jane
on.
Jane got a gun. Got a gun. Is that like what? I mean, that can't be. Maybe Jane. Anyway, we don't need to get into whatever.
The influence. It does feel like the influence was subconscious there, possibly.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next track. This one is called Glide. And it has kind of a long intro, so I'm going to skip a little bit in for Joe. Here's the intro to Glide. This is the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young intro that I remember.
Close your eyes and just glide. hold on tight to the
strings.
And then we'll skip in a little bit here.
A little boy.
Yeah, this is the one that's about, like, swinging on a swing set and flying a kite and how it sucks to be an old man who owns the New York Knicks.
Do you think the musicians worked for half a day? Like, realistically, a full day? Half a day? How much time, if you're a professional musician, how much time do you really devote to, unless he's paying you like a crazy day rate,
yeah,
because he's got the money, but like, I figure still it's got to be like, even for him, it's like, I'm coming in for a day. And if he'd be like, I want you to try that again. No, like I played what I played.
It's, well, he did produce a video for this one.
Yeah, this is the single, I believe.
This is the one where he's constantly cocking his head to the side and kind of closing his eyes as he sings, because of course he closes his eyes when he sings. The video involves a dog sled. And he's singing on the dog sled.
Are there permanent members of the Straight Shot?
Yes, I guess there are.
So that's the thing. Yeah. I guess maybe if they played... I don't know.
I think he pays the Straight Shot a lot
retainer,
of money.
Like a full salary.
I think they're on a yearly salary, would be my guess.
Because that is one thing about him and the New York Knicks, is that he is a bad owner, but he's not afraid to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
And to spend like lots of money just harassing people who crossed him.
Mm-hmm. He kicked Spike Lee out of a Knicks game.
I mean, he's going after like an entire giant law firm and anyone they do business with, using facial recognition to keep them out of Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
and not just for Knicks right things.
Yeah.
Like he kicked a child out of an ice show out of Ice Capades because her mom was employed by a firm that was
suing him in some kind of
legal action constantly with everybody.
But
so.
I think this is the only thing that gives him any joy whatsoever. So I think he pays these people a lot of money to be in his band. But I don't know. Listeners, if you know a member of the Straight Shot or are a member of the Straight Shot, please call us on the phone and leave a voicemail. I will change your voice using high-tech audio equipment. No one will know. And let us know how much you make a year as a member of JD of the Straight Shot. Spencer, what notes do you have on Glide?
Less than a minute there, I thought like I would kind of enjoy this song if it weren't by this band. I mentioned Fairport Convention the last time we were on, and that came to mind again with this one, you know. But his voice is just so chunky. He just shouldn't be like the singer of any band.
Well, especially the harmonies on this that the band are doing are like really tight behind
him. They're good,
yeah. Yeah, and it's very, again, it's very upsetting to hear the juxtaposition.
But it was nice to hear a major key, you know? I was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, right.
Unreal. Like, we're getting a major key here. That was cool. And on AOL Build, and this is the last time I'm going to mention that, he said, it's really a song about keeping the feeling of a child alive inside yourself, which is something that sometimes is not so easy to do as an adult. So we have a song to help you along. That's what he said about Glide.
I hate it. All right. Now it's time for what I think is the worst song on this album. And it is called Nature's Way, track 6. Here's how it starts, Joe. It's like if Owen Pallett was terrible.
It's nature's way of telling you something's wrong.
What does that
it's
mean?
It's nature's way of telling
well,
you.
Well, we're
never
going to
learn then.
It's nature's way of receiving you. It's nature's way of retrieving you. That's nature's way of telling you something's wrong. Nature's way.
All right, this is
what
one
is he
that,
talking about?
I don't
what
know.
Is nature's
I don't
way?
Know. But there is one that I this is one I pulled a clip from because when this section of the song happened, I laughed out loud. So here's the clip I pulled.
It's nature's way of telling you summer breeze. It's nature's way of telling you dying trees.
That's right. The lyrics are, it's nature's way of telling you summer breeze. It's nature's way of telling you dying trees.
Uh-huh. No. What have you done, James? I do.
That's how nature retrieves and receives you.
retrieves is
like nature retrieves you. Like it sounds like he's talking about dying, but then I don't. Like, did he have a heart attack? Like, what is?
I can't. That's a good theory that he's having heart
like
palpitations.
It, does he always like feel the wind and go like something's wrong? This is how nature tells you something's wrong. You feel a breeze?
Yeah. What is nature's way of telling you something's wrong?
I'm being retrieved right now.
Wait, is this like anti-gay?
Yeah, that's a thought I had too, but I didn't know how to square the circle. You know,
like when, oh, yeah, like yeah. when do you hear the argument of like it goes against nature? Yeah. It's like usually homophobes and like transphobes.
It's a slippery slope.
It's nature's way of telling you, Adam and Steve.
This song is because it's also nothing changes. It's the same. It's that same all the way through. Like at no point, I guess there's a little.
They speed it up. Yeah. They speed up those notes, Joey.
And then he just comes back to singing the same thing. Yeah. But like there's a little like Baroque vocal arrangement that tries to make the return of the bullshit better. Uh-huh. But like it's so. Confounding. It's so confounding. This is some bad music right here.
Yeah, Spencer, what were your notes?
It builds
here?
To nothing.
My notes were just basically what we've already been talking about.
That's the worst song ever?
These
okay,
are my
great.
Notes. Yeah, essentially. I was like, it would be
this
the
is the one
song so far, if not for Under the Hood, Under That Hood.
I think this song is worse than Under That Hood.
But
at least.
Why isn't it Under the Hood? Like it even fails at its crappy pun.
All right. Now it's time for the track 7, Don't Waste My Time, which the funniest thing about this is I asked Joe and Spencer if there are any clips you want me to pull, let me know, and they both mentioned the same clip from this song, but for different reasons.
Wait, so we got to play the beginning and
we're,
then
I know
that,
we're going to get there. We're going to get there. Yeah.
I'm amazed.
So,
I'm
all right,
amazed.
So here's the beginning of Don't Waste My Time.
Stairway to Heaven intro?
Phone is ringing. There's no one home. A bird is singing all alone. Patch of blue peaks through the gray.
All right.
A ray of hope.
I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here. There's
the dress. No sin committed, no sin confessed. Crumbs of.
All right. So the thing that really hit me about this song is this is like a real singer's song, right, Joe?
It's really in many ways a modern day lullaby.
Joe was texting me and said, okay, I finally heard Don't Waste My Time and just started laughing. I think I like this now.
Well, I was so mad that I had to listen to this. And then hearing this fucking twinkly fucking bullshit where, because when you also, you can tell he's like trying stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't, you would think you would maybe respect him, but no, it's the opposite. You're just like, shut up. baby is crying. Yeah. Whatever fucking bullshit.
Who is wasting his time? Did we get to that?
It's not clear. It's
mine.
I almost think that. I mean, you can count on him every time to make the laziest rhyme possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just like safe at home, no one called in. On the phone.
Yeah. No.
So yeah, Joe.
I said maybe she won't be my baby.
So Joe and Spencer asked for the same clip, but so this is the longest clip we're gonna hear.
Okay.
The beautiful. Front part is Spencer's request, the back part is Joe's request. So
perfect.
Here we go.
Walking here like some diplomat saying did you catch my ass? Don't wanna talk about those things I did. Just call it water under the bridge.
Dog's face right now.
Okay, so I think it's clear why Spencer requested the part he did. Joe, you requested these violins. Do you want to talk about why?
So the melody of these violins. Dun, 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 is in that's the bridge of the bends by Radiohead.
Oh, shit. Wow.
It's like, that. To a note.
Oh, yeah.
It comes in at like a minute into the song The Bends by Radiohead, the title track of their second album.
Baby's got the bends.
All right. Spencer.
We don't have any.
Okay, Sean, friends. We know what The Bends sounds like.
As sung by James Dolan.
Yeah, come on.
No, I would say I was so the reason I flip this, that's so amazing, Joe. And I didn't catch that. I think that's not JD's fault. I think that's a little something from the band. But yeah. I would say that I wanted to pull this not only because this is like the closest he gets to belting.
Yeah.
Which is like so uncomfortable sounding.
Yeah, I'm gonna play that just that part again. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, that's the wrong. Ryan Pitlin, I'm playing the wrong track. Hold on, sorry.
Oh,
oh God.
Just call it water under the bridge.
Oh, it hurts a little bit, but like, I that's the first thing I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed that at the end of the bridge, he's singing the word bridge.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Then like, I noticed, yes. And then I King. Noticed because Joe brought it up 2 minutes ago that they're copying another bridge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Seconds later. That's a bridge play or something.
That's a bridge too far.
Well, what right? struck me when I just listened to this now, just this part.
Just call it water.
if you disconnect just that belting, yeah, it's not that bad. It sounds almost like it's like the church or something, like something real new wavy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's echoing the Bunnymen.
Yeah, 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 exactly. but it's really the juxtaposition of the lead up and that, and also the style of music he's chosen to sing. All right.
Yeah.
Boy, that had a lot of bad stuff in it.
Lordy.
Spencer, do you have any notes you want to give other than those parts on Don't Waste My Time?
I just said I was now getting the feeling of what it's like to deal with this guy singing an entire album's worth of songs in his own voice that he thinks are very, very clever. And also, I just was like, what is this about other than ambient spite? I just don't know. Like, I don't understand.
This is a guy making you come to his karaoke private room birthday party and singing every song.
Yeah.
Yes.
And all he has is like, I got some Miller Lite pitchers.
All right, let's move on to I think my favorite track on this album, because it's insane. This is the title track of the album, Ballyhoo. And here's how this one begins.
Yep. It's a guitar.
Mm-hmm. But just wait.
Yeah.
Step right up. Just cost a dime. Sir, you've never seen anything quite like this before. Right through this door. Every fantasy you've been waiting for.
Unreal.
This price point is ridiculous.
Go see us. Time that we bring out the great. They can't feel it anyway. And not like.
Okay, so I have a theory about what this song is actually about. This is the only one other than the Trayvon Martin one where I think I know what this one is about.
Oh, good. Okay.
Good, so he's singing about...
the circus.
No. I think this is him talking about how he's always getting bad media coverage, how the New York press hates him. Because it's entirely about, like, the masses paying a quarter to see a freak. And making them feel bad.
Joey, everybody's got a freak inside.
Well, hey, I pulled two clips from this one. So first off, I just pulled, he had some questions that I would like you each to answer. Okay. Here is a clip of some questions.
Have you ever seen an alligator woman? Have you ever seen a two-headed child? Does it make you feel a little more normal? See a wolf man running wild.
All right, so...
We'll go through them one by one.
One by one.
Have you ever seen an alligator woman?
All right, have you ever seen an alligator woman, Sean?
No, I have not seen an alligator woman.
Spencer, have you ever seen an alligator woman?
No.
Joe, have you ever seen an alligator woman?
Yeah, no, sorry.
All right, let's. Here's his next question.
Have you ever seen a two-headed child?
All right, Joe, we'll start with you. Have you ever seen a two-headed child?
Maybe on like 2020 when I was a kid.
Yeah, I think I saw one once on like the Guinness Book of World Records. Those guys that are the conjoined twins, maybe.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I don't know if they're children though. They're adults.
No, I've seen. There was a girl, two-headed girl. It was on, I think it was on 2020. It was Primetime Live or something, mm-hmm. But definitely that's the kind of image that, you know, stays with you.
Mm-hmm. Just like this song. Sean,
absolutely.
Have you ever seen a two-headed child?
I actually saw one at the Neutral Milk Hotel. Mm-hmm. There was a two-headed boy. I have seen, that was like, well, you know, when I was working on the presidential campaign for Dr. Ben Carson, mm-hmm. that's one of his big accomplishments is separating Siamese twins at the head.
Spencer, have you ever seen a two-headed child?
It was just like a JPEG, maybe. Like, not otherwise.
All right. Next question from JD.
Does it make you feel a little more normal?
We can skip that one.
Well, this is connected to the next part.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. This you're is, correct.
Yeah.
You're,
does it make
you're
you
right.
feel a bit more normal to...
to what?
Make you feel, make you feel a little more normal. See a wolf man running wild.
All right, Joe, does it
I'm
make
gonna
you...
say, I'm going to say definitively no. It does not make me feel normal to see a wolf man running wild. In fact, it would make me feel insane. It would make me doubt everything about everything I thought I knew about reality. So that's an obvious and quick, like, absolutely not. I promise you, JD, it's not going to make me feel a bit more normal. It's going to make me like feel like I've lost my tether.
Sean, does it make you feel any more normal to see a wolf man running wild?
No, but also, like, he's so excited. Like, I don't, it's making me not understand the mechanics of the freak show.
Also,
because, like,
the
wolfman's gonna murder everybody.
His answer is clearly yes. Like, he's leading you to be
like he's trying to get you to come to the show, and he's promising you all these things. But I just don't know how that works in the context of the freak show, I guess.
Spencer, does it make you feel more normal to see a wolf man running wild?
I think so, yeah. I feel good about it.
I can actually speak from experience here. I once saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, and I did not feel good about
it.
Oh,
yeah, his hair was perfect.
Yeah.
I would like to share a description of what James Dolan put on to wear that. He had a concert on the day of the 2017 NBA draft to, like, prove how hands off he was with the show. And also, it just sounded like maybe a date became available that he didn't expect. This is thank you, SB Nation writer Charlotte Wilder, for your journalism service. Dolan put on a top hat, a pair of aviator sunglasses, and draped a scarf over his ill-fitting velvet blazer. His self-described carnival master outfit made him look like the legendary Muppet band leader Dr. Teeth. And that sounds about right.
So, everyone, I want you to close your eyes and imagine James Dolan wearing that and then singing this.
Everyone got a freak inside.
Come on.
Which is the worst part of this album, is this section here.
Everyone got a freak inside.
All right, JD. I have one more video I have to comment on, which is Sean just talked about the outfit. I don't have to imagine it because I basically saw it, and you can too on YouTube. if you look up Ballyhoo, JD and the Straight Shot Ballyhoo, you will find a video posted by somebody named Walter Wouters,
and great.
Sort of like it's kind of a Dutch name because it was performed at the Moulin Blues Festival in the Netherlands.
Great.
Where their gig was. This is one of the more embarrassing live performance videos I've seen, I think. I wrote down this very specific outfit, Sean, that you mentioned. I wrote down that he's doing cosplay as steampunk Elvis Costello because he's wearing a top hat and round sunglasses. He's doing the vocal. You would think he's creating some grand performance opportunity for himself as an MC to like do this patter.
Yeah.
This performance, it proves that idea desperately wrong. It's almost like boldly unperformative. He barely commits. He just says it off from memory while wearing this outfit. And then he leaves and the band starts their breakdown riff and they play it for like 2.5 minutes straight, just speeding up the entire time to get the band, like the audience pumped. And when they're finished, he comes back and finishes the song. And there's, it's like every tire and every car deflating at the same time. It's
just yeah, because like, he said this.
Everyone got a freak inside.
Yeah. Like, but he's barely even, his performance, he doesn't even sing it. It's the, this is unacceptable stuff. And I really thought that it was basically like Tom Waits. Like earlier in the album, I thought like, there's like a horseshoe theory where this is on one end and Tom Waits is on the other. And and like, this is the song that like ended up proving that theory correct.
Four more tracks here to talk about. Let's yeah, just blow through these here. We got Hard to Find is the next track. Honestly, don't remember anything about this track. Here's how it goes.
At this point,
No, hold on. This is what I think is actually the most offensive track on this album. Hold on.
What? Okay.
I was like, this is a generic country waltz. Okay. Fine. They complete the whole progression.
All right, I'm going to jump.
All out of luck. I'm all out of time.
Okay, you know how earlier, the reason to me this is the most offensive track on this album is, you know how earlier we were talking about how this feels racist, his singing voice? Mm-hmm. This is like he's doing whiteface. Because there are parts of this song where he literally says, like, I used to roll a seven, but now I don't have a dime. And it's like, this is a billionaire singing this song about, mm-hmm. like, being, like, a poor country guy.
I ain't got no hope. No reason or rhyme.
What's up?
One day life's a plenty, then dollars turn to pennies, and you're stuck in the back of the line. I once rolled a seven, and I lost it all betting. Now I'm scrambling for a dime.
You cannot be a billionaire singing that.
No, no.
You cannot sing that.
Scrambling for a dime. Yeah. Do you know why he's scrambling for a dime, though?
Why?
He wants to go see Ballyhoo. He wants to see that alligator woman. They should warn him about the wolf man. He's out of control.
It is running wild.
Save your dime, friend.
It's so offensive. If this were a cover, he could do it. But this is an original song. The man's dad gave him the New York Knicks and Madison Square Garden. You cannot sing about how you have no luck and you're poor. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, JD. This is a bridge too far for me.
He's doing poor face. It's actually, he's doing blackface voice, I guess. But
no,
just,
this is like George. This is like what's his face? This is like Tammy Wynette face.
He's singing. He's kind of singing like George Strait a little bit, but more like George Jones, I guess.
Yeah, I was singing George Jones, but no, it's Tammy Wynette. This is Tammy Wynette face.
Yeah, I wrote that lyric down, the one about the seven, the rolling a seven. And then also, like, he's like, at some point, he's like, oh, Lord, give me a sign. And I'm just like, nothing has ever been more phoned in history than him singing that.
Also, I don't really want to get into it, but if you roll a seven in craps, most of the time that's bad. You lost. Most of the time you lost. There is one condition where seven is a winner. Most of the time it's the loser. Not to quibble with old Jimmy D here. Joe, anything you got to say about the country waltz Hard to Find?
Seven and betting is a really, really
it's a bad
rough
rhyme.
That's not almost doesn't qualify as a rhyme at all. And how dare he? But I echo your sentiments about, like, you cannot talk about, like, I'm looking for a dime. Like, you've always had $100 million. at least at any given moment in your life. Fuck off.
Also, the Knicks have not lacked for point guards. They have plenty of dimes. You know what I mean?
All right. Oh, yeah, I did want to say about Don't Waste My Time. I'm going back there. Okay. I actually think Don't Waste My Time is the most honest song on this album because, going back to the Knicks, I want you guys to know the Knicks once went 20 years without giving a rookie they drafted a second contract.
Well, yeah, Don't Waste My Time is definitely a thing he has said out loud. Yeah. Of all these titles, he has definitely said Don't Waste My Time to many people many times.
All right, here's Here He Comes. This one also like a fake religious song. Hate this one. Anyway, here we go.
Out in fields, eyes of steel, hear the gospel song from a boy named John, so clear and strong.
No.
Watch him.
All right, I want to point out that Joe just heard that lyric and immediately put his head in his hands.
His name is John. He's the boy. It sucks.
And then I'm going to skip ahead here.
I heard this from John, and that's the gospel.
My reaction to this song was he watched an episode of Deadwood one time and was like, I bet we could get our song on the final credits, on the closing credits of Deadwood. And it was the intro credits to Hell on Wheels on AMC.
No. Oh my God.
Not this song, but a song by JD and the Straight Shot.
Oh, really?
Is.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I don't remember exactly what's, but it sounds, it's a song that sounds exactly like this.
Was Hell on Wheels the show everybody made fun of because they kept promoting it during Breaking Bad?
No, that was...
what was that?
Low Winter Sun.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great pull, Joey. I'm very impressed.
All right.
The one note that's worth saying here is, I have heard more lazily constructed songs than this one, but to what end? Is that the case? That's just the question I keep asking myself.
All right, and then we've got two more songs left. This one is called I'll See You Again.
Is this not the final track?
No, there's a bonus track.
I didn't get to the bonus track.
Me neither, because this is, to me, like, guys, this is the goodbye, but I'm sorry.
Okay,
we'll
talk about the bonus track when we get to the bonus track.
Okay. Beautiful.
Who fights and everyone knows, tucking in your chin, deliver the blow again.
It's the same. It's the same we've been listening to the entire time.
So me in your heart for a while.
So the topic of this song is the afterlife, as far as I can tell, and it's like trying to figure out like what is coming after death, but he doesn't know, like no one knows. And yet he's like doing that thing where he's like asserting that he does, like a kind of does. He's like, I'll see you again. Like, that's as much as I can say so far. I'll be seeing you again.
There's a lot of fake religion on this album that feels like it's religion for the sake of he thinks these songs are supposed to be religious. At no point does it feel like he believes it.
And it's a classic ending song, too, because he's like, I know you might think that this is the end. And I'm like, you're threatening me. Just end it. Just stop this. Stop this now. Cease this silliness.
Sean, is there? Do you have anything to say about the final regular track on this album?
No, I was just so happy for a little bit when it was halfway through, because I was like, the album's over. And you know,
I mean, it definitely sounds like the album's over too. Mm-hmm. It is very happy trails.
So I was like, well, we made it. Mm-hmm. We never have to do this again for 3 years.
For 3 years. He says, I've heard it said that you just fade away. And I'm like, he's painting himself as like a poet of the earth, some folksy wanderer, like an intellectual traveler, like a spiritual traveler.
This is a very, very rich man with no accountability for anything that he does.
Mm-hmm. No, he's dumb too. Like,
yeah.
Is the main thing.
All right, Spencer, any notes on I'll See You Again?
That's it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, and then, of course, there was the final track, and that one goes like this.
Why you on Facebook? 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 Why you on Facebook?
That is Why Are You on Facebook by Van Morrison. All right, that's our episode. Sean, let's go with Joe. Where can people watch your new special? Well, it's your newly titled special.
Yes, newly titled. It's now titled Recommended Based on Your Search History. You can find it on YouTube by searching Joe Quazala Helium. Or I guess you could search the title, too. There's many ways. One of the easier ways, though, to see my stand-up, to see my sketch videos, to eventually, hopefully, listen to my upcoming album is to just follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Joe Kwa, J-O-E-K-W-A, and Joe K, Joe K on, I'm going to call it Twitter. I'm not calling it an X.
Yeah, good job.
But, if you follow me on those places, you can see all the massive amounts of shit that I put out to varying degrees of success.
Spencer, where can our lovely listeners donate to get your record pressed?
I'm gonna. It's miserable to read.
It's a Kickstarter.
Link.
I'll put the link in the episode description. How about?
Yeah. So, but what you can do is follow me on Instagram at SO Timeshare if you have any interest in doing so. That's where you can find the link in my bio. It's in my bio right now for my bizarre but highly listenable, I promise, and very enjoyable 40-minute composition based on a 60s rock tune called Let Her Dance by Bobby Fuller Four.
It's one of the great songs ever. Sean, is there anything you would like to plug?
Yeah, I'll be performing at Coyote Sonoma in Healdsburg, California on Friday, August 18th.
Great. And then as for me, you can always, first off, I should say, Sean, thank you for sending me the Frankie Muniz Racing t-shirt out of the blue.
Now I'm on his mailing list, which is kind of amazing because it's all apologies, basically. Like it is the closing track of In Utero every time. He's just like, we shipped this as soon as we had some trouble with the skeleton design, but we're gonna get it together. They actually seem like they deliver things really fast to me, but he doesn't feel good about his ability to deliver these promptly. I think he wants to like overnight his Muniz gear, which is admirable, but like it's never
been urgent. He definitely wanted to overnight all of his olive oil when he briefly had an olive oil company.
Of course, he had an olive oil company.
As for me, you can always follow me on Twitter at Frankie Muniz, where 3/12/14 I tweeted, if I accidentally put a live scorpion in my mouth and chewed on it, am I going to die? Don't ask how that happened, but my tongue is numb. Thank you, Joe. I promise we'll never make you do this again. Spencer Owen, thank you so much. I promise we probably will make you do this again.
Trust the process.
And shut it down. Everyone got a freak inside. And we're going to hear Spencer's, a portion of Spencer's song here.
The trailer edit. Trailer edit.
Of Letter Dance by Spencer Owen and James Rabbit.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.